one. Go.
Safety can this... be rolling.
Thank you.
I don't know what it is about this necklace, but it's a lovely necklace. It's solid silver. It was given to me by my mother before my bar mitzvah, and I've worn it ever since.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's special.
Because it is special. My mother gave it to me speaking Hebrew to me, and I understood what she said. I wouldn't understand what she said now, though.
Mm.
A bar mitzvah takes months and months to get ready for. You have to go to all these special classes and stuff. It's really quite intense. And then you're expected at age 13 to stand in front of all these people and profess just how wonderful all this stuff is, and that you're accepting Judaism into your life.
Yeah. Well, a lot more work than it was. So, like, I don't know, go get baptized at 9 or whatever I was. Just like, Thursday. Yeah, I was baptized at 9. But that was the only, like, thing I had to, like, prepare for, really, besides all the other, like, just the constant other stuff. But I didn't ever have to, like, go to classes or anything. Like, it's not the same world of dedication, for sure.
I heard something about Canada. It's like there's three Canadian provinces, three Canadian provinces, which threatened, if Quebec had seceded, that they were going to join the USA.
We have, like, Alberta is, like, kind of, we make the joke that it's the Canadian Texas. Like, it's, like, where our farmers, our country boys are, and that's where we have, like, the most fundamentalism. And I don't mean to say that to, like, offend anybody who's in Texas right now. Like, I know what you guys are going through. But that's where, like, our far right kind of, that's where they came from. That's where, like, all the people who organized the convoy last year. And, like, that's where most of that comes. It's mostly Alberta, but it's also some in Saskatchewan and Manitoba too. Yeah. It's the three prairie provinces. So, but
Well, Winnipeg's in Manitoba.
Yeah. Winnipeg.
What do they say in Winnipeg?
I don't know. That's part of it. It's like the Bible Belt. There's several Bible Belts across Canada. It's kind of along the lower part of those three provinces.
Here's the Bible thing. Suspenders, then?
Yeah.
Do they hook onto your socks instead of your belt?
Yeah, pretty much. It's like a big sled, like a sled dog, strapped all together across the bottom.
That's why the Iditarod's so long. It's got to go all the way down there.
Yeah. Ironically, it's like the part, I mean, most of Canadians live in the bottom third of the whole country because it's too cold up north. But
nobody lives in Nunavut.
No, there's lots of people up there. But if you look at the population densities, we're all clustered around. I live 13 minutes from the border. Yeah, like I can see it from my deck.
Most Canadians are farther south than I am.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I don't know. I live in, like, my own little Bible Belt here, but it's different. There's, like, a little cluster where I'm in British Columbia as well. The community I live in right now is actually highly densulated with
highly indensulated. It's like indoctrination, but only for, you know, population density.
There's a lot of Seventh-day Adventists here, though, which is really interesting. That's
no alcohol for them, then.
And they go to school, or they go to church on Saturdays, and they have lots and lots of babies. So it's interesting. They're really nice, but
are 1 minute to show. So I'm going to interrupt the conversation here with apologies and say hi. Glad y'all have y'all with us tonight. We're about to get started with tonight's episode of Truth Wanted. As you all know, your rendezvous windows will be going dark just like that. Don't worry, you haven't been disconnected. We'll be starting the show soon. We have an intro animation. We do not have a promo reel in the middle, rip to my dead homie, the promo reel. But we do have an outro animation. Your mics will be hot throughout the duration of the show. The outro has about 10 seconds of silence on the end of it. This is intentional, so wait for that all clear to be given before resuming the conversation. I think that's about it. So I just want to thank you all for being here. Have a wonderful show, and we'll see you on the other side.
Video is ready for live.
Thank you.
Muting for stream check.
All right, starting stream.
Watch Talk Heathen live Sundays at 1 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTTH and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callTH.
Hello. Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Truth Wanted. I am your host, ex-Christian Aaron, and tonight I am joined by the wonderful Phoebe Rose. Thank you for coming, Phoebe. This is the live call-in show that happens every Friday night at 7 p.m. Central, where we get to talk to people about what they believe and why. If you'd like to call us, the lines are open now, so call in right away if you can. Number is 515-12-991-9242. Or you can get a hold of us through your computer at tiny.cc/calltw. Truth Wanted is a product of the Atheist Community of Austin, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to the promotion of atheism, critical thinking, secular humanism, and the separation of religion and government. So before we get started, we wanted to give you last week's result from the We Want the Truth segment. As you know, each week we ask you, the audience, a question that you can respond to in the comment section of the video. Then we pick our three favorite responses and show them at the beginning of the next episode, and then give you the next question for the next week. Last week we asked, in one sentence, what is the best pickup line? And the audience delivered. Here are our three favorite answers. Coming in at number three, we have from Rick Treat. From Rick Treat, you mean, so tell me, do you come here often? Isn't the greatest pickup line ever? No wonder I'm single. Number two, coming from Patrick Foster, the pickup line, I'm sorry if this is blunt, but I think you're incredibly attractive and would love an opportunity to get to know you better. 90% of the time, it works 100% of the time. And our number one answer of the week from No Channel Here Bro. Best pickup line is, not only am I the master of suspense, but I... And that's our answers from last week. The prompt for this week is complete the sentence. The best part about being abducted by aliens is. So, Phoebe, do you have an answer for that one?
Finally finishing off my lifetime supply of Vaseline.
Excellent. I was thinking that I was thinking about this question all week, and I honestly came up with two answers. The first one just being that it'd be a good chance to, the best part about being abducted would be a chance to make new friends, not only with the aliens, but in the support groups I have to join afterwards because nobody believes me. And the second would be probably the best thing is the opportunity to ask if Jesus ever incarnated as an alien. Ooh. Right?
Or another really great thing. So the best thing about, you know, being abducted by aliens would be finally meeting King Charles III.
Yes. So if the audience, if you have any answers to that or complete the sentence answers, please put it in the comment section of the video. And if we like your answer, we might read it off next week. So Phoebe, thank you for joining me tonight. This is our first time having you on as a guest, and I'm so happy that you're here. Can you tell the audience where maybe they've seen you before and a little bit about yourself?
So you might have seen me on former ACA products such as Secular Sexuality. You may have also seen me floating around the nonprofits where I successfully staged a coup recently and took over the conductor's chair, and you know, I now have my minions and my subjects. You know, I am the queen, and the ego is, you know, here as well. But you may have also seen me on the Atheist Experience, where I was on a few weeks ago. But yes, yeah, I float around the ACA, and my ego is, you know, floating around with me.
Well, I'm glad that we are finally getting a chance to have you on here. You and I have worked together before on the wonderful Secular Sexuality, which you can catch episodes that were recorded, even though we kind of wrapped that one up for now. I appreciate you being here. And so this show, Truth Wanted in particular, we do like to take calls kind of from anybody about almost anything. We do try to focus on, obviously, the truth, whether it's like religion or like a question about maybe some pseudoscience or conspiracy theories or wooey kind of things. I have a bit of background on that. What about yourself? Do you have any experience with pseudoscience or the spirit world? Or tell us a little bit about your background.
So I'll always remember I worked in local government once. That's as far as I will go with the identifying characteristics here. And I worked in homelessness, shall we say. And couple moves into this temporary accommodation and go around, do a welfare check on them. And you go, oh, yes, sir. So how are you settling in and stuff? And the woman looks at me. She goes, it's just not good here. Oh, what's wrong? Bathroom problems, blocked drain, you know, broken door. No, there's nothing wrong with the structure of the property. Mm. Oh, so what's the issue? Well, my sister died recently and she's, you know, not, you know, crossed over. She's still in purgatory and she needs some help. And she's here asking me for help.
Okay.
Oh, and how do you know this? It's spooky impression. Well, she keeps turning on the kettle. She keeps on, you know, putting the toaster on, and the fridge door keeps opening, and you know, my bed, you know, it's moved slightly. Oh, okay. So, how can I help you with your feeling more comfortable here? Well, I don't know. It's just probably something I've just got to get used to. Think nothing more of it. But, you know, being a good professional that I am, I go back to the office and I sit down, like the manager's in the office, and I go, oh, yes, I've just been to go and see so-and-so at property. Oh, how are they getting on? Oh, well, she said that, you know, she's having some problems, you know, dealing with the death of her sister. She believes that, you know, the spirit of her sister is there. And, you know, she thinks that, you know, that her sister's haunting the property. Manager goes, oh, stop you there. I'll be back in a second. Blinking heck are you going? Manager poodles off and comes back. Oh, hello. Oh, give this person a ring. They can help you out. There's me thinking that it's going to be like, you know, grief counselor or something for right, her.
Which no. Would be probably the best thing, yeah.
It's Father So-and-so from the local Catholic cathedral.
Perfect.
And I said, are you wanting me to phone? Oh, yes, if you phone them up, they're on our approved contractors list. We've used them before, and we can arrange for them to go round and we can help them out by performing an exorcism.
Lovely. Right. And this isn't a professional. This is in a professional setting, right? Like
spending taxpayers' money on this.
Approved contractor. Wow.
Approved contractor. So, you know, I do as I'm told. Phone them up. Oh yes. Oh yes. I worked with you before. You're. Yes, it's very good for us. I've just got some restrictions. I don't work Saturdays and I don't do Thursday afternoon. Okay, and I don't do Sundays either for obvious reasons. I don't do Sundays. No weekends and no Thursday afternoons. Well, I've been instructed to arrange it. So how does it work? Oh yes. Well, I'll come round and we'll liaise with the client. It'll take about 3.5 to 4 hours. And oh, okay. So I go round and I book it.
3.5 to 4 hours. I just pause on that for a moment. That's a long time to be. I don't know what they're doing over there, but like in an exorcism, you'd think it would be quicker if like you're doing the Holy Spirit in the thing. Like, why would it take so long? I mean,
it's just one of those things that's just a bit strange. So yeah, I then went back round and spoke to the client, and the client was like, oh yes, thank you for that. I'd like you to be there as well. I went, I'm going to have to get this cleared with my manager before I can go there, because, you know, I'm not sure whether it would be professional for me. I go back and my manager then goes, oh yes, if the client wants you there, it's probably best that you go as well.
And you're thinking...
No one has asked me throughout this whole process whether I'm comfortable with this situation. No one has asked me anything. You just think, dear goodness.
Right. You were so, probably looking for an out. I'm imagining.
Oh, trying to, every step you're delaying. I was looking for an out. And oh, it was that's just brutal. One of those things that's just like, so yeah, on the taxpayers' money, an exorcism was performed and I phoned in sick.
Okay. That's my next question. So did you end up going? Like, what was it like?
No, I phoned in sick. It's like, oh, no, I'm not feeling great. Oh,
right. That's a shame. I'm so curious to know, like, what happened and was there any follow up? Would it work? Like,
and then
so many questions.
And then we went round and it's like, oh, how wonderful for you. They go back round and see the client and it's just like, oh, how great.
Right.
How are you feeling now? Oh, I'm feeling a lot better now. Oh, I feel that my sister has, you know, been released from the property. She's now where she needs to be. Oh, it's just great. And those kinds of things made me really question a lot about myself. And in this kind of situation, I felt fairly uncomfortable because we were endorsing religion as the government, because it was local government that I was working in at the time. And then it was, well, what can I do? And it made me realize that, yes, the skeptical head on my shoulders is one of those things that I'm really quite relieved to actually have, and just to go, hang on, this feels a bit wackadoo and weird. But yes, it's an experience I will never forget, and a story that I will carry with me until my memory starts to fail or I die. Yes, and well, that's all I can really say about it, because I don't work for that local authority anymore. And yes, well, would I endorse that? I don't think I would endorse that, because, well, I'm a big believer in the separation of religion and government, and that was probably, above all else, that was probably my biggest objection, is that we as a local government were endorsing religion in some way, and it was just very uncomfortable to be endorsing religion in a local government setting. But
and were there you go. Were you able to report or like send a report in afterwards?
Well, the father, he sent in a nice written report saying that it was all successful and that they had successfully released the spirit from its purgatory, and it's just like, jeez, this is bonkers. This is absolutely bonkers. But this is something that I will always remember, and it's like, as a professional, you can't challenge somebody on these things because they could be sincerely and deeply held beliefs.
Right, there's probably a huge ethical. Yeah, there's probably a huge ethical consideration there. Like, perhaps if the client had asked for that particular, like, in very specifically, that would have been maybe appropriate, but the fact that, anyway.
Because I've had clients who are Jehovah's Witnesses as well.
Yeah.
And I've had to go through these questions with them. It's like, oh, so do you know this, and do you know this, and do you know this? And it's like, yes. That can be quite challenging as well, because, well, Jehovah's Witnesses are, in my opinion, a cult.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, we've had people on the program before who were also, you know, former Jehovah's Witnesses. I have friends who are Jehovah's Witnesses. I've kind of had my own time where I did my own deep dive into that group, and if it depends on the scale that you're working on, I would concur in that for sure. I actually think it's probably one of the most kind of one of the most intense like sects of Christianity out there. And weirdly, I mean, not to derail onto Jehovah's Witnesses, but weirdly, a lot of similarities to like the evangelical denomination I grew up in, just very similar beliefs, which is really wild because I was always told they're completely wrong. But I mean, everybody's wrong but me, right?
So, oh yes, me, and me are correct, whereas you, and you, unless you agree with me, right, are wrong.
So, what's your background in all of, you know, this whole world of skepticism and all of that? Did you grow up religious?
So I was raised as a Jew, raised in, you know, practicing Judaism, and that was a wild ride. That was, because there's a lot of festivities that go along with Judaism, and there's a lot of rich culture that goes along with it. There is nothing to do with religion at all. There's a lot of history that goes with it, and there's a lot of ethnicity culture that goes with it as well. But there's also a lot of religious, well, for want of a better word, a lot of religiosity that goes with it. And whilst I may not be a practicing Jew, I still consider myself to be a secular Jew. My ethnicity is primarily I am Jewish. So if I'm asked on a form to put my ethnicity, I will generally tend to write that I'm Jewish ethnicity. And I think that's one of the big things that a lot of people struggle with, is because people go, oh, you're Jewish, therefore you're religious.
Yeah. No. We had talked about that a little earlier. Like, there's not an equivalent like process, because, you know, Christianity is considered like an ethno-religion. So when people leave Christianity, they typically don't hold on to the label. Yeah. But it's different. And I mean, you have to understand the nuance there, because it's more than just a religion in that sense. So yeah, I get it.
It's like in a sense, in the UK, you can list your ethnicity as Jewish. You can list your ethnicity as Sikh, as an example, in the census, but you don't necessarily have to list that as your religion as either Sikh or Jewish. And that's one of the big things that a lot of people who are unfamiliar with the ethnographic breakdown of Judaism and Sikhism in particular, they think that, oh, they're just religions.
Yeah.
And it can be very annoying at times when people assume that I won't be working on a Saturday, or my Friday nights are not free, because, oh, you're Jewish, you don't do that.
I think that's a good example of why, like, whatever you were raised in, if you're raised religious, it's good to like explore what else is out there, so you have better understanding too when you're talking to people, so you don't come off as like super, I don't know, abrasive in that way. Because I mean, it's really easy for, I mean, on this side of pond too, to just think that like however it happens over here is how it happens everywhere. And I know that there's tons of people who practice all different religions in my country as well, but it's interesting how quickly I can, even though I'm not a Christian anymore, there's still ways that I can just take someone else's experience and kind of just transfer it onto my framework. And if it doesn't match up perfectly, then I'm like, that's not right. And I think, you know, that's where you get a lot of like the expressions of like, you know, the angry atheist, because you can't be, you know, Jewish and an atheist. Well, of course you can. Like, you can sit and listen to somebody for a minute. yeah, here we go. So let's just sit and like hear you out. And it honestly, it makes perfect sense if you are listening. So
and yeah. So I've also had experiences where a family member died and another family member hired a medium to try to contact this family member. And I turned around to this family member and went, but you've normally got, you know, quite level head on you, quite skeptical. Oh yes, but it just felt right that right. they were able to, you know, speak to me and speak to them. And I went, you've for a very long time have told me how much nonsense a medium is. I mean, you've watched things like Long Island Medium. I've come around to see you and you've watched things like Long Island Medium and you have been laughing at the show because you've clearly known that it's just a bit of a carry-on, shall we say. And now you're hiring your own medium to contact a deceased family member.
Does it, I wonder if, like, does that go to, towards the idea, like, you just, when you're going through something like grief, so both, you know, both of these stories, they involve grief, like a human emotion that, I mean, everybody yeah. will experience at one point or another. I think even if you do consider yourself like a quite a skeptical person, I think like that's when you're the most vulnerable, right? And that's when these people yeah. who take advantage, because they know there's a market for it. Even people who have never believed in that sort of thing, you put them in the situation where they're really like really struggling because they've lost somebody. And like, yeah. even if they don't, they might just be like, well, I'll just test it again. I'll just see how it goes. And maybe it'll make me feel better. And I can understand where there's going to be it because yeah. you sit on the skeptical side of it. Maybe it'll just be kind of fun and we'll just see what happens. But I think that there's still a lot of opportunity there yeah. for harm to happen, right? Even if it's just that you're not yeah. processing your grief all the way. Or what if they do say something that, you know, is upsetting, or if they just take advantage of you? Yeah. What if they literally just do their job and take your money? Like, how is this family member of yours afterwards? Did it like, do you think that you saw any kind of even subtle harm in going through that experience?
Well, I asked some things like, so what did they talk about?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they said things that they couldn't possibly have known. And it's like, okay, so what were these things? And I said, but did you actually at any point say, no, you are wrong? Well, no, of course not. They were correct. I said, that's the problem. They've come in with these generic claims that are very broad-based that you can't really say no to. And I say, I understand you may have got some comfort from it, but do you believe that you've actually spoken to this family member? And if so, why only this person and why can't I do it? Why this? And it was just like, yeah, but it was right in the moment. And that was about as deep as I got in the conversation.
Well, and if you truly believed that that's what was happening, what's stopping people from selling all their possessions and just, you know, spending all of their money, like contacting them forever? Like, if you think it's real, then there's also kind of these falsifying behaviors that people have too. I mean, not that it's like you could just spend every day at the medium's office or whatever, have them over, but you'd think that if people really 100% kind of believed in it, that they would actually it would come through more in their, well, maybe but not, but I'm just thinking of other ways that you could even plant a little bit more doubt in their head.
I always remember that the UK government actually endorses mediums in one way, shape or another, because it used to have an act of parliament called the Fraudulent Mediums Act, which by extension
you have to be doing it properly.
Yeah, which by extension means that the government of the United Kingdom at one point recognized that there were things that weren't fraudulent mediums.
Right. Oh, that's wild. Yeah.
But you brought up an interesting point about trauma. And I think one of the most vulnerable points that people have of believing some of these more outlandish claims, like, you know, extraterrestrials have come and invaded people's bodies and skinwalkers are, you know, invading parts of Colorado, is when they're actually leaving religion. And that's quite a vulnerable stage, because I think it can be quite a hole that people are trying to fill, and they're just trying to fill it with something else.
Oh, that sounds very familiar, Phoebe. I have spoken about that in my own story as well, because I left Christianity, but I was on my way out and I didn't quite get all the way to skepticism before I fell into the New Age kind of category for quite a while. And there's, you know, when people call and talk to us about different things, I can relate, because I sort of believed in a little bit of everything for a time, like whether it was like the whole chakra systems, I believed in auras and lucid dreaming, which is kind of odd, something I can still kind of do, but whatever. Astral projection, like these other kind of strange things. And then, as I've mentioned before, my embarrassing story is that I believed I was part alien for a while. So I have a lot of empathy for people who go down and like have these beliefs, because, you know, during the time it does feel like so true, and like you have finally have this answer for everything. And like, thankfully my little stint in Alienville only lasted a few weeks, but looking back now, I can see quite clearly why it happened. I was struggling. I needed to go to, you know, trauma therapy. I needed some help. I needed to go see a doctor. I'm a neurodivergent. I needed that too. So when I felt like an alien, it probably had more to do with the fact that I was struggling with things that are much more explainable with a proper diagnosis and treatment and that sort of thing. So I have empathy for those people who are who believe that. And I want to hear their stories, and I want to see what these beliefs are doing for them as well, because I know now that when I had those different beliefs, like, they had a purpose at the time. For me, it was like there was a bit of comfort in it. It made me feel special. Made me feel like I had an explanation for why things felt whatever the way that they were. So I don't know. If I would love to hear other people's stories too. It's embarrassing to admit that I thought I was part alien for a while, but
it's very big of you. It's very adult of you. It's very, very grown up of you. But I say, I had a friend of mine who used to go, I shan't name this person they used to go and see because I don't want to give them free advertising, but they used to pay money and used to go and regularly see somebody who believed that the Isle of Wight was, you know, ley lines because of nefarious individuals doing nefarious things with those under the age of 18. And that, you know, the royal family are shape-shifting lizard people and all this very odd stuff. And it's just like, you're a fairly sensible human being, but if I stray into these topics, you just go, woo!
Yeah. And I think one of the elements that I like to bring up is when they mix in like these outlandish beliefs, but they've got a little hint of truth in it. That's the kicker. That's the thing that got me into it. Cause like, I was not a dumb person. And I don't think anybody who has these beliefs are necessarily a dumb person. But you know, they had a hypothesis that involved real words that I understood, and it involved blood type, and I knew my blood type. And like, there was things that were just believable enough that I could like suspend my disbelief for just a time. So I don't know. It's pretty wild.
Oh yeah. I mean, it is amazing what the human mind can believe if it wants to believe it. And it's amazing how easy it is to just say, oh, it's just easier to do that, and then just give up.
Right.
But I think the most entertaining thing that I do is I've got a very good friend of mine who we play devil's advocate quite a lot. We take some claims and we just go ins and outs and ins and outs. And it's just, how can we just break these down? And she's very good at playing devil's advocate and going through, well, what if it is this? Well, what if this is true? And we get really quite deep on some things. And she's just one of those friends that I could just talk to for hours. And I have to just go, okay, you're melting my brain here slightly. I need to just step back because you're getting too convincing with this. And I just need to stop, hang the phone up, and then go, hang on a minute. Are you really saying that, you know, the earth is, you know, a flat disc with, you know, a large, you know, thick wall of ice around it that you can just flip over at any time? And then you go, oh, he started again now. It's just like... Really?
Uh-oh, don't straw man the flat earthers.
they'll be filling up our call sheets.
Well, last week we had a really great episode with, it was last week.
But yeah.
I don't necessarily want to get into that. I'd rather talk about it, and we do already have some calls on the line that we're going to get into here shortly. Did you have anything else you wanted to say, Phoebe, before we
jump into them? I can say is that I have had some very wild beliefs in my time. And I am grateful that I have managed to wrestle my skeptical head and go, oi, I don't think that's quite what things are. It's like, yeah. And we'll see what the callers say. And we'll see if any of those callers hit on any of those in those areas where I used to go, oh, hang on a minute, I used to believe what you believe. So, yeah, if you're ready for it.
If anybody else ever had a time where they thought they were part alien, I would love to hear from you, because sometimes I feel a little alone in that belief, but that's okay. Before we jump into our calls, we've got a few in the line to do with those things as well too. So before we get into that, we do want to take some time to thank our patron of the week. Every single week we get to shout out a patron that donates through tiny.cc/PatreonTW. Thank you for supporting us on that. That's probably one of the best ways that you can show your love and support for these programs. This week's patron of the week is Matthew Schultz. I hope I said that right. I didn't, but thank you, Matthew, for donating. And if anyone else in the audience right now wants to look for ways to help make these shows happen, go check us out on Patreon. Phoebe, you want to get into some calls now?
Oh, here we go.
We've got a couple. I'd like to talk to Phil.
Dr. Phil?
Yes.
Hello, Phil.
Let's talk. Want to talk about?
Hey guys, how are you?
Well, I'm fabulous on this, you know, early Saturday morning for me. It's 1:30 here for me, but you know, it's wonderful. You know, what do you want to talk about, Phil? What do you want to talk about?
Well, you know, we all want there to be alien life, or most of us do. And I think you put your finger on it. People believe what they wish to believe. Now, I have an interest in science, and I've been kind of rethinking the alien question. And I think that it is quite possible that there is, and when we say extraterrestrials, I presume we're talking about sentient life, right?
Things not from this earth that have some form of ability to control itself without external input.
Exactly. So I think it is entirely possible that there is sentient extraterrestrial life. I think it is also entirely possible that it might be extremely rare, or we might be it, because we only have one sample, you know, to extrapolate from. Life could be exceedingly rare, particularly intelligent life. So I guess my qualm is, I'm disturbed now when people say, oh, with all those stars, there must be other intelligent life out there. No, there's no guarantee of that.
But here's the thing.
I mean, am I wrong?
Here's the thing, though. When we say intelligent life, and we say there cannot be any other form of intelligent life, I have to stand back and go, are we just being a very selfish species here? And are we just saying that because we're intelligent and what we consider to be a form of intelligence, we're therefore going, well, there you go, it can't be because it's so difficult for it to have happened for us, therefore it can't happen in some other way, shape, or form. I'm not convinced by the argument that there's no forms of intelligent life out there because it's difficult. That seems to be a very flimsy way of going about it. I would be more convinced if you were to say, okay, we have been exploring the outer reaches of the universe. We've been putting telescopes out there. We've been putting radio signals out there, and we've been trying to listen for them, but we haven't got anything back. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's not there yet. It's just that I am not convinced. But to simply say that because it's not something that's plausible, but it is possible, doesn't mean that that's going to convince me.
I think it's really easy for us as humans to try to want certainty as well in these things. I absolutely love thinking about like the possibilities, and I hear like, you know, the arguments that there could be something, and I hear all these, you know, the experiments of why we might, even if there were, maybe why we would never be able to make contact. And I think like for me, the spot where I sit in is just this ability to kind of sit in the unknown and just be able to say, I don't know. Like we haven't been convinced one way or another. And I think that is something that we shouldn't be afraid to think about or afraid to, like, I know there are people, and I have people in my own life that would really rock their world if that were to happen. Like it would disrupt everything about their belief system. So I think that it's good to sit in a place where you're open to the answers. And I don't, anybody who's saying that they know 100% that they have certainty on it 100% this way or that, I think they're wrong. They have to be at this point because we just don't know yet, right? And there's
that's my point.
Avenues to explore.
I'm sorry, pardon me. That's my point. Okay. So many people say, oh, there must be other life out there. No, there's no guarantee that there is. There's no guarantee. It could be exceedingly rare.
I've got a question here for you. Why must it be exceedingly rare? Just because we haven't encountered it yet doesn't mean that it's not commonplace in other parts of the universe, on other planets. Just because it hasn't happened for us, why does that mean that it can't be commonplace in other parts of the universe? Why is that?
I said it could be exceedingly rare.
It could be.
It could be very common.
Yeah, but that's the other side that I think that a lot of people who are saying that they're must be maybe trying to go down with that. Well, it's here, it could be there. I think it's always worth exploring both sides of it, because I think that we sometimes get bogged down in these conversations of going, oh, it's rare, it's this, it's this. But what if it wasn't rare? What if human intelligent life, or a version of intelligent life, was really commonplace in other parts of the universe? And we're just the outliers because we're so far away from it all, and it's just rare here.
Well, I think that's a good example of how it would rock a lot of people's worlds to find out if there is intelligent life, like even if we're on the lower tier of the intelligence, if we were to meet, you know, discover this other civilization. Because I mean, how many things does that undermine, sorry, how many things in someone's belief system, their worldview, does it undermine as soon as they're not the special, this rare, super one of a kind thing? I mean, even just the fact that we're the only, like the Homo sapiens are like the only human species right now. I mean, imagine how it would be different if there was still other things going on right now. We have this myopic kind of view of ourselves at this point too. And for those who don't believe in, you know, evolution via common descent, like, how do you explain that? And so, I mean, I do get it. And I understand why humans think we're so special. But yeah, maybe we're not. Maybe it's just at the pinnacle of where we are right now on this time frame, you know?
Here's a fun little thought experiment. Stars, big, huge, massive stars formed pretty early, we think, after the Big Bang. And they exploded and they sent out the heavier elements. And the next generation stars were able to, you know, have carbon and silicone and so on, the other things necessary for life. Well, somewhere, if life arose other places, there had to be a first one. And those sentient beings would have looked out across the galaxy and all those millions and millions of stars and thought, with all those stars, there must be other intelligent life out there. And they would have been totally wrong because they were the first.
So are you saying we could be the first?
Numbers are not a guarantee. Numbers do not guarantee life.
What if we're the first? What if humans are the first?
Mm-hmm.
But what if we're the last? Like, what if we're the last? So these are questions that are going to affect you. What if we're the last, and you know, that's the end of the universe. We are the end of the, you know, the train, and you know, the big bounce is going to happen and we're all going to, you know, disappear again. And it's just like, well, there you go. Well, if we're the end of it all.
Yeah,
well, the very famous Fermi paradox, you know,
that's the one I was trying to think of.
where is everybody? Well, it could be, you know, they finally added another term to the Drake equation from, you know, the x number of stars, x number of planets, et cetera. They finally added another term. How long might intelligent civilizations last? You know, once you get smart, intelligence may be a killer. You know, you blow yourself up, you create a disease, you poison your planet. Intelligent civilizations may have a very short lifespan. They may come and go in just a few thousand years.
Is the Silurian, is that what it's called? Silurian hypothesis? Does it kind of go down this one that maybe there have been other, you know, advanced intelligent species on Earth even? I think it's just like one of the many, many hypotheses that are out there. But I mean, there's a million different explanations and a million different avenues that we could go down with this one. It's like, it's a never ending conversation. Yeah. So, I mean, I do think that I like where Phoebe, I like where you take it, like always assessing, like, what is the core thing that we're saying here? Like, we are, it's so rare, or if we're the first or we're the last, like these are all great thought experiments. Yeah. I mean, ultimately, I think all you can do is sit in a place of uncertainty with it all, but good questions.
Carl Sagan and maybe Arthur C. Clarke both mentioned possibly the galaxy is teeming with life, intelligent life, or we could be all alone. Either possibility is terrifying.
Yeah. Okay. I love how Carl Sagan puts it.
I do want to get a plug in. If somebody wants to look into this further, there's a British astrophysicist named Jim Al-Khalili, who's an excellent science educator, and he edited a book called Aliens, The World's Leading Scientists on the Search for Extraterrestrial Life. And it's 15, 18 different separate essays that look at the question, and they're all written by scientists, and they kind of turn it over and look at it from every angle. So that's what got me to thinking about it. And that's available.
That sounds like the right
audiobook on YouTube.
Yeah, that sounds like the right way to do it, I guess. So thanks for the suggestion and the resources, and for giving me another book yet again to read and spend money on. Thank you, Phil.
More and more and more. You'll just be swimming in. You'll be swimming in the leaves of books if you're not careful. Maybe you'll find more intelligent life in those books. Maybe.
Maybe. So thanks for calling in, Phil.
Thank you, Phil.
Good thoughts on that one. So
anyway, thank you for your call, Phil.
Yeah. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so by donating to our Patreon, as we mentioned earlier, at tiny.cc/PatreonTW. There's a couple of different tiers there, and you get your name shouted out during the show, like we did earlier. And if you're extra lucky, they might even pronounce your name properly. You can also support the show by becoming a member. You get emojis in the chat, your name gets highlighted in the chat, and you will be immune to chat timeouts for as little as 99 cents a month. So couple cool ways to support us there. I didn't know you could get immune to the chat timeout. That seems like a little it's risky of us.
But we are taking money from them though, so you know, it's they are paying. They are paying, so you know.
It's true. All right, Phoebe, let's jump into another call. Let's talk to Bobby. Bobby, also calling in from Texas. Hi, Bobby. You are on Truth Wanted with Phoebe and Aaron.
Hi, Phoebe. Hi, Aaron.
Hello.
I was going to talk about the recent spate of UAPs that were shot down or left to fly that were in the news recently, earlier this year, and how some of those may be questionable.
Let's hear what you have to think about it.
Well, obviously there was the Chinese spy balloon. I'm not an expert on this. I may get some things wrong. People will probably point those out, but
that's okay.
So when it comes to the spy balloon
over the U.S.
So yeah, hello? I think when it comes
not sure
to,
if it's just the delay here. Oh, 1 second here, Bobby. I'm not sure if we're having a bit of delay here, but so if you're cutting in and out, just try to go with it, and we'll work around the delay as much as we can. But just let us know what you're thinking about the UFO, and if you're still there. If not, we can pop you down in the queue again and try again in a minute. But you still there with us, Bobby?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, let's go for it and just work around the delay if we can.
All right. So the UAPs there were three over the U.S. There was one over Canada. There was one over Uruguay. There was one over China. In addition to the Chinese spy balloon, one of them was reportedly belonged to a commercial U.S. company, and one the pilots reported didn't have any visible means of propulsion, but they didn't talk about that one a lot, and they didn't talk about several of them, and so I was just thinking that some of those might have something to them that's beyond the normal thing. I mean, we don't see a lot of things being shot down from the sky all at once.
I think it was I think there was a lot of, you know, US government theatrics as well that went around with it, and there was a lot of hype that went around with it, and there was a lot of showmanship that went around with it, and I think that was very much the US playing them up so that they brought attention to it, but at the same time they made it so that nobody really paid that much attention to it. So the way I looked at when I saw the news coverage, it was like, oh, this thing, it's floating over, you know, mainland USA. Let's go and shoot it down, because then we're looking all big, tough, and very, very American, and going, "Rah! I'm an American, and I'm using my big toy." And I went bang, and it went bang too. And I think that there was a level of intentional hype that went with it. That's what the US government kind of has become renowned for, shall we say. But I think that when it comes to these quote-unquote spy balloons, I think what needs to be borne out here is that we just simply don't know what they are. And there's so much speculation when it comes to these individuals. And when it comes to these shooting them down, it does seem slightly over the top for me to actually shoot these things down. Because, well, if I'd done it, I would have tried to actually bring the thing down and analyze it in one piece and go, well, okay, what on earth is this thing? As opposed to, well, what the US government did was it went, here is my nice toy that I've flown up here that cost a lot of money, and I'm going to go... but you also notice that Canada didn't shoot them down, and Uruguay didn't shoot them down, and other South American countries didn't shoot them down, which I think was quite telling about what they were, because if these had been nefarious military spy capability, I think that what we would be seeing now is we'd be seeing a lot more, how can I say it? What's the wording I'm looking for? Pushback, and a lot more secrecy around it as well. And there'd be a lot more diplomatic tete-a-tete, shall we say, between, say, Canada and the United States, and China and Uruguay, the United States and China. And I think America would be pushing a lot more on its other involved countries and going, well, what are these things? So I'm still a bit of a loss as to what these things actually were to start with. But what do you think they actually were? What do you think they actually were, Bobby?
Well, I don't know, but I think the U.S. did definitely shoot down the one over Canada at the invitation of the Canadians, and Uruguay shot the one down over Uruguay. So that's and there has been, as you said, a lot of fol de rol about it. But at the same time, the fol de rol has been about a couple of them and the Chinese spy balloon, weather balloon thing, but not all of them individually.
I say, do you think they were nefarious?
Well, nefarious is a bit of a stretch, but I don't know what they are, obviously. But
I think we might be coming up again with that idea of remaining somewhat agnostic on something until we have further information. I think that's kind of what I'm hearing again from this completely different topic, but a similar idea. I mean, I do agree that different countries handled it differently because we did have one fly over my country and it was brought up and you know, these things happen, but it is handled differently. And obviously you have a plethora of content creators and people who are going to strum up more controversy over it. And we're in a really highly political, highly conspiratorial kind of moment in history right now. To say like we don't see this kind of thing happen ever in history. Well, I mean, most people who are living right now never saw a pandemic happen either. So I mean, that's not necessarily the reason to think nefarious, but I think this is a good opportunity to kind of talk about media literacy, talk about where you're getting your sources from, talk about source checking and these kind of things too. I don't know 100% what's been going on necessarily either. But I do know who I can trust and what sources I can trust. And I'm not telling everybody to go just trust their government all out. I'm not saying that by any means, but know your sources, know how to check things so that you're not getting pulled into any kind of conspiracy theory. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, definitely. And I'm not saying that they were aliens or whatever, but I guess they could have been. I haven't gone to conspiracy sites.
No, I'm not saying that you have.
Mainstream sources.
I'm not saying that you have. I'm just using it as an opportunity to remind people that media literacy is a thing. And as much as we want to have all the answers right away, there's obviously things that are going to be either unknown or maybe withheld until there's more information out there. And it's hard to be patient sometimes and wait, especially when something does involve kind of security, things like that. So it's valid to question and to be a little nervous or want more information or be unsatisfied with the information that's been given. I think that's very normal for sure. So, but I mean, I don't have any other answers for you, Bobby, on that one.
I just got one thing I want to say. Do you think that these will be like what Roswell was? Do you think that there will be these never-ending questions about, well, what were these white balloons over continental Americas?
I don't know that we'll have questions forever, and I don't think they were all white balloons. Obviously, the Chinese spy balloon that was in the photos of it being recovered was like a balloon, and maybe one or two others were balloons, but all of them, I don't think were identified as balloons. So I don't know what they were, but it seemed like a lot of noise was being made about them being balloons when they weren't all balloons. And so that just makes me wonder. And I'm not saying they were anything in specific. I'm just saying that it bears wondering.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of skepticism, right? Is to question and always be looking for, you know, all the different sides and making sure that you have as much information as possible and that you're ruling out as many possibilities as you can. So, I mean, it's not nothing wrong with wanting more answers before you decide on something, or just not, you know, listening to something the very first time you hear it. Like, I think that's kind of all we can really expect from anybody, is to just take information and look into it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've piqued my interest. I'm not saying that I'm going to run to any particular Reddit site or anything, but I'll definitely check it out. I mean, I've been following the story, obviously. I think everybody kind of has been following the story, but I actually am curious now to know, is this kind of blowing up into more conspiracy theories that I haven't heard about yet? Because it's always kind of good to get your ear to the ground, so if you will, to know where these stories are going. If you watch them happen from a little bit more of an objective space, it's easier to kind of not get pulled into it. So if you're seeing these things forming, I think it very well could. I mean, like I said, we're just in this era of conspiracy theories just running rampant right now. So I think anything could be turned into a Roswell situation at this point. if we don't get a handle on ourselves. anything really could. So
yeah.
Yeah.
But I say the thing that does strike me here, though, is just how differently I have seen it to how clearly the two of you have seen it. Because in Britain, we've just seen it as, oh, it's this thing that's happening over in America, in Canada, in the Americas. And we just go, oh, it's just more of the same, China v. US, US v. China. And we covered it and we were just like, Americans with big toys, you know, shooting down new things they can shoot down. And it's, as you say, media literacy and the perspective that I will have as a Brit consuming the media in my country has given me a slightly different look at it to how you two have clearly looked at it. And that's quite interesting for me.
And I mean, to defend myself as a Canadian here a little bit, I honestly have had I'm somewhere in between, I guess. Like, I've heard about it more and I've heard it a little bit more intensely because I am a Canadian. I'm not too far away. And there was one shot down, you know, on Canada airspace. So I've heard about it, but it's also been reported in not quite as a theatrical kind of way. It's just kind of very matter-of-factly. Like, the reports are just out, you read them, and then you're like, okay, so this is what we know so far. And you can look into the sources and as much as you can. But because we're so close to, you know, the border and we share so much culture, it's still easy for these things to quickly spark people's suspicions about nefarious things. So it's been a little bit of both. Honestly, I will say that in my day-to-day, it doesn't get brought up a whole lot because it's kind of, I mean, it is a completely different culture in some ways up here in Canada. I mean, or there is a lot of different culture. We don't have anyway, I won't go into it right now. I think you guys know where I'm going. I'm going to drop it.
You just going to say poutine a lot?
Have you had poutine?
No, never been to Canada.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, Bobby, I'm going to let you go because we do have some more calls on the line. If you haven't tried a poutine, you should. And I will look into the story more too.
Maybe those balloons were floating poutine.
Oh, yeah. For dropping the gravy on the poutine.
I'll pass on the poutine, but thanks a lot.
Classic.
You guys have a good evening.
Thanks. Thank you, Bobby. Classic judging before you've tried it. I don't even know how to convince somebody to try a poutine who's never had a poutine. It is absolutely delicious.
The next question I got is, what is with blooming onions? What are blooming onions all about? You know, you take an onion and you deep fry it almost as is, and then it just kind of explodes slightly. They just look really weird.
I don't know if that's a Canadian thing.
I was told it was a Canadian thing, blooming onion.
Canada's quite large. We also do have some differences from like the East Coast and West Coast. Maybe it's an East Coast thing. We have onion rings here. That's a big one.
You got Vancouver Island at one end, and you got Newfoundland all the way over the other side. Yeah. And it's just like, yeah, and Labrador, yeah, that tiny little island of Labrador.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't traveled all the way across Canada yet either. So I mean, I've tried.
I mean, what is with that half time zone that Newfoundland and Labrador have? What is with that half time zone?
I don't want to speak ill of my fellow Canadians, but it's just so extra.
I think that's a conspiracy theory. That half-hour time zone, that's a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, you're here.
Anyway, who's next on the line?
Well, we do have a couple more calls to get into, but before we hop into that, many of our audience members know that the Truth Wanted store is up and running again, and we have been featuring a special limited-time item each month. This month is particularly good. This month's t-shirt is, it says on it, Bigfoot saw me, nobody believed him. And I think that's one of my favorite ones we've had so far. All of the Truth Wanted merch and the other ACA merch can be found at tiny.cc/merch ACA. And if you want to hear our content in audio only form, maybe you work somewhere that you can sneak in listening to our shows throughout the week, you can visit tiny.cc/AEN podcasts for all of the latest shows. Everything that you could really want to listen to is on there, including our show that we're on right now. If you don't want to watch our beautiful faces, you can just listen to us there. Anyway, let's get into our next call. Our next call is...
beautiful face.
For people... I guess, right? So I actually do. I'm a podcast listener to myself, so and it's more because I don't know, I don't like small talk with people. It's more about small talk and school pickup. Anyway, next call coming in from Emmanuel. Again, we've got so many Texas callers. I love it tonight. Emmanuel calling in to talk about empathy. Hi, Emmanuel. Emmanuel.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, did I say your name properly? I think I might have mispronounced it.
Yeah, don't worry about it, no problem.
Okay.
One time I was walking by the street and I was watching someone, doing an open mic, and he was like preaching and he was like screaming. And, there were like college students basically around that street, and they were saying like, bro, don't shove your faith down our throat. And what I was trying to say was, sometimes you have to understand why people are like warning you, or, as a religious person, do you understand how much people are like caring for you while they're trying to warn you? You know what I'm saying? It's like, I see in the side of secular or atheist side that a lot of people think that, religious people warn atheist people because they're trying to force them or manipulate them. But for the most part that I've seen, it's because, they're just scared that the other person is going to hell. You know what I'm saying?
I hear what you're saying. And I think for myself, coming from a very conservative Christian background growing up, I kind of hold the position now that if I'm talking to somebody who's religious, that especially if somebody who's Christian who believes in a literal hell, if they believe in what they say they believe, they should be yelling at me. They should be screaming that I'm going to hell. Otherwise, what are you doing? If you truly believe that your friends and family are all going to burn forever and ever and ever, why do you even go to work? Why do you go to school? Why do you have any other thing going on in your life right now? That seems like the scariest thing in the world. So, I mean, yes, I can have a lot of empathy for people who do that. Will I say that overrides my annoyance or my frustration in public when somebody is preaching at me in a public space when I'm trying to just go about my day? Not always. I can hold those things at the same time. I can have empathy for somebody and understand where they're coming from, but still have my boundaries or my limitations on what I want to listen to and when.
And the other thing is, I'm sorry. Hello?
Hi. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. So, this is like, many times I've called this show before. So, even me, I keep calling to this show because, I thought it was like easier to convince atheists to actually believe in God. Now I'm seeing why it's very hard to actually convince, someone to actually believe in God. So, all the proof that I've got beforehand, they just throw it out because I don't know, for some cases, it's not like compelling to them. But even me, when I tell other people, to receive Jesus as the Lord and Savior, I'm doing it out of like, out of a good intention. It's not to harm them. It's not like to belittle them or whatever. And a lot of people on the secular side, they just don't understand it. Even one time, I remember there was a guy, he's attracted to, I don't know what you call it. Can you help me out with words? He's attracted to the same gender. So, I was just trying to say receive forgiveness and stuff. And I was telling him to repent. It was not that long ago. And I was just doing it out of like a good character. But he said I was being like homophobic and stuff. And I didn't actually understand it. This happens like a lot.
Go ahead, Phoebe, take it. Go ahead.
Hang on a second, dear. I'm going to just ask you a slightly more esoteric question here. And by esoteric, I mean slightly out of the box here. Do you believe that I have the right to choose to go to hell? Do you believe that I have the right to ignore what you're trying to say to me, and that I can therefore, based on your belief that there is a hell, I'm assuming that that is something you believe. Do you believe that I have a right to choose to go to hell if I want to?
I don't believe in free will, so I don't think anyone has a choice to go to heaven or hell. So God predetermined.
Hang on. I'm going to slow you down here then. So if you don't believe in free will, why are you trying to convince people to change their mind?
I don't try to change their mind. I just do it out of like a good intention.
I understand that, but is the ultimate goal here to try to tell somebody that they're doing wrong to change their ways?
I don't try to change anybody's way. I just try to make them a Christian.
So you are trying to change their ways because you're trying to... So the answer to the question is yes. So can you see why some people may take an offense to that if you were to say, join me as a Christian or you're going to hell?
I think that's like two questions, I guess. So, you know, when I used to believe in free will, you know, I used to do it so that they'll make the right choice and I'll try to persuade them. But right now, I don't believe in free will. So if I tell the word of God and someone receives it, I'll say like, oh, they're probably predetermined to be saved. And if they don't receive it, I'll say like, oh, they're probably predetermined to go to hell.
Emmanuel, so
on this point, I just want to ask you on this point, then, if you don't believe in free will, then why do you think that the individual that you were talking to about having a same-sex relationship was doing it then? Why do you believe that there's in any way, shape or form this occurring at all if there's no free will?
Even that attraction is not from his choice. I think there's like a study.
But why does it exist is what I'm trying to get at here. I'm trying to get at why does it exist in the first place if it's something that's supposedly going against Christianity here. Why does it exist if there's no free will?
What I think is, first of all, I'm not saying that he's going to hell just because he has
I've moved on from that. I'm asking you. I'm trying to drill down.
I'm sorry.
If something that goes against Christianity exists...
Yes.
Why does it exist if there's no free will?
It's because God predetermined some people to be saved and some people will never be saved.
Whoa.
Emmanuel, you're Calvinist, correct?
Okay. I'm sorry.
You're a Calvinist?
Hello? I don't know. My denomination, I'm Pentecostal. I used to actually be a Mennonite. So when I was a Mennonite, I used to believe in free will because I grew up in a Mennonite church and they used to believe in free will. So whenever I do, whenever I tell God's word, I used to think that they have a choice so I could persuade them because they have free will.
So
the only reason that I teach now is because so that I don't be asked, you know, I believe that I'll be judged. So it's like, I've done my part kind of thing.
Emmanuel, so you said that, okay, it doesn't really matter. I was raised Pentecostal. Maybe we just had a different denomination, but so you roughly hold to the idea that we don't have free will, that some people were pre-chosen, were destined, if you will, to become Christians, to follow God, and some people were never going to. So the reason why that you're preaching is that it is just part of your duty as a professing believer, and that God will somehow, if it's going to happen, it's going to be on his time, right?
Yes.
So you believe in a God who specifically created humans that he knew would not accept him and will burn forever.
They will burn forever, but I don't have a right to ask. So I think in the ninth chapter of Romans, specifically says...
Back up a second. I've got to ask you a question here. So I used to be a practicing Masorti Jew. So are you saying to me that when I was a practicing Masorti Jew, believing in God, that I had been predetermined to go to hell?
No, what I'm saying is God knew and he has predetermined. I mean, I don't know even... Maybe you'll become a Christian in the future, so I can't actually tell.
But then why go through all this? If there's no free will, why go through all these previous bits? Why was I a Masorti Jew practicing Judaism, believing in God, then leaving Judaism and becoming a secular Jew? Why go through all that? If there's no free will, why go through all that? If there's no free will,
so what I think is, even in the story, you know, God knew that we, you know, Adam and Eve will eat the fruit, but he put them there and God knew that we will fall into sin. That's why God actually elected his elect people in Christ before the foundation of the world. So in the end, if you become a Christian, then you're probably elect. So if you hear the gospel and if you end up, you're elect.
Yeah, Emmanuel, I mean, Phoebe and I both heard, we've heard this many, many times, but yeah. I think the biggest thing that, I mean, there's lots of different things that I don't agree on that you're talking, and I'm sure we could have a 10-hour discussion where you could go do a deep dive into theology and the biblical scriptures that are backing up your point of view. But ultimately, I'm not going to be able to get past the idea that you are worshiping somebody you believe in, worship, and submit to a creator type God who specifically created something that it has intelligence and everything that about us as humans, just knowing that they would be born, they would live their lives, they would have whatever suffering happens on this earth, that they may have a good life or a bad life, and then afterwards they will, he already knew this, they're going to go burn in hell for eternity. What kind of creator creates something just so he can watch them suffer forever? That doesn't sound like a benevolent God to me. That sounds like a sadist.
And there's one more question I need to ask you. Why have you been chosen? And why haven't Aaron and I been chosen? How is this choice made? Why haven't we been chosen yet, as you will put it, because we could become Christian? Why have you been chosen over Aaron and I at this precise moment in time?
We're not really sure if I'm chosen and you're not chosen, because we don't know in the end, if I end up, losing my faith. I was not chosen to even start up. But if you end up a Christian, you're probably chosen.
But does it have to be your denomination of Christianity, or can it be a Catholic? Can it be a Jehovah's Witness? Can it be a Seventh-day Adventist? Can it be a Plymouth Brethren? Can it be an Anglican? Can it be any flavor of Christianity? Or does it have to specifically be your flavor of Christianity?
It doesn't have to be a Pentecostal. It doesn't have to be Protestant. If anyone believes in the Son of God and, Jesus died and resurrected, he'll be saved.
So how do we do that? How do we become a Christian to you? How do we do it?
But I have to say this just before you answer that question. So in Judaism, I recognized the existence of Jesus when I was a practicing Jew. I recognized Jesus, but I didn't recognize Jesus as the Son of God. I recognized Jesus as a prophet. So does that make me, what does that make me? And how do you answer Aaron's question?
So what I think is still, you're giving me a scenario that I can't answer. I'm not God, so I don't know the future. Maybe, even in the deathbed, you might receive Jesus Christ and you might go to heaven. So I can't speak on your behalf. What I believe is if anyone believes, in Christ, he'll be saved. So what I think is, let me give can I give an example, by the way?
Well, I still want you to tell me how I become a Christian. Like, how do I do that? I can't apparently choose. I can't choose anything. I don't believe in this. And so what do I do? What's the point of talking to me? There's nothing either of us can do.
And how do I find the truth and become a Christian? How do I find the truth and become a Christian? How do I do that?
So what I think is, being a Christian is a very easy thing. So it's just like you just have to believe, and you'll be with Christ, throughout
it. But believe in what?
What am I supposed to
believe in?
The same thing that Emmanuel does.
Jesus died and resurrected.
But I can believe that, but not realize. But there's nothing in there that says that I have to recognize the forgiveness of sin. There's nothing in there saying I have to recognize the Son of God. I, as a Jew, could say that the prophecy of Jesus, this is me speaking as when I was Jewish, not as me speaking as, a skeptical Phoebe now. So when I was Jewish, I recognized Jesus as the prophet, a prophet. So I could very easily say that that prophet died and was resurrected by God. I could very easily say that, and I could very easily believe that. But I'm not a Christian. I'm still a Jew in that scenario. So does that scenario nullify, or does that scenario mean that I will be saved because I have gone, Jesus existed, Jesus died, Jesus was resurrected. God did that, but I'm not going to follow this person because they're just a prophet.
Too bad,
too bad.
I'm sorry. Hello?
Okay. Yeah. Well, Emmanuel, I think we're kind of getting to like the, I think we're just going to go keep going in a circle here. I think that I don't want to answer the question for you, but I feel like if I were to sum it up, then yeah, no, Phoebe, you're still going to burn in hell. I'm going to give you one more chance to answer the question. Then we're going to let you go for this week. And, yeah, I don't know. I'd like to talk to you again, maybe in the future, if you could come up with some solid answers for these, like how do we become Christians, and is Phoebe going to burn in hell forever? But yeah, go ahead, finish Phoebe's question.
So you do have to believe that, you know, Jesus is the Son of God. So, you know, that short thing that you just said, I don't think it's enough to get you saved, but you have to believe that, you know, Jesus is the Son of God. Because when you say he has resurrected from the dead, you're actually, you have to imply that he is the Son. So if you deny the Son, then you'll be judged and damned. So I do believe it's necessary to believe in the Son. If that's the question that you just asked, I believe I answered.
So I think I should, you know, get my fire extinguishers at the ready and, you know, yeah, be prepared for burning in hell. I might take some aloe vera with me as well, because those burns, they're going to need some things.
Yeah. Well, Emmanuel, I appreciate you calling in. I know you can't see us going anywhere else with this call. I do take some... I do contest that is this Pentecostal kind of upbringing that I was raised with. I think if it fits more into Calvinism, in my opinion, but it doesn't matter. Call us again sometime. Maybe we'll get a little further in our conversations if we can keep it on track with what exactly you want us to do to become the right kind of Christian.
Now, here's the question that I have to ask this one question to you. Yeah. Can I float away on a Chinese spy balloon and become a Christian? Can I float away on a Chinese spy balloon, become a Christian, and, you know, be very empathetic about it? Can I do that?
Well, who am I to answer that? I am just a human. How can I possibly know
the
future?
You're just an errand.
I cannot know the future, Phoebe, so it is just my duty to tell you that you should.
Well, but you where's can. Where's my spy balloon? I mean, I'm feeling left out in Europe here. There's no spy balloons floating over Europe. It's just not happening. I mean, well, we'd blame Russia and we'd, you know, instead of China, because in this part of the world, we tend to blame Russia for more things than China, because I think Russia's closer. But, you know, where's my Russian spy balloon? And is it red with a yellow symbol on it?
Well, you're about to feel even more left out, because I'm going to tell you about an upcoming event here on March 26th. I'm going to be left out too, because unless I can hop on the plane and get there before then, I doubt it though. If you are in the Austin area on March 26th, consider joining us in studio. We are having in studio shows on the March 26th at the ACA Free Thought Library. We're having Talk Heathen and the Atheist Experience will both be live that day. So if you're in the Austin area, please come down there, get to know some of the people that put these shows on, and be in the audience. It should be a good time, and I wish I could be there. Phoebe, we do have one more call. You want to? Should we take one more? Should we squeeze it in?
Here we go. I'm gonna get myself.
Okay.
At your discretion, bring whoever this caller is in.
We will give it a chance, and you just let me know if we need to not talk to this person. Let's talk to John from Canada. John has a question to ask. I'm gonna let him ask the question. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi.
John.
This question is for Phoebe.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering, what is the difference between a cis person and a trans person? Please tell me, explain to me.
So a cis person is somebody who identifies with the gender that they were assigned at birth, and a trans person is somebody who does not.
Does that answer your question, John?
Yeah, but how do you tell the difference?
Well, I'm not a qualified doctor. I'm not a medical scientist, so I will not be going into the medical science of that, because it's not my place to go and do that. But I will ask you this one question. I'm assuming by the nature of your question that you are somebody who does not experience gender incongruence and has not experienced anything that means that you are uncomfortable in your gender identity. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true.
So how do you know that you don't have these experiences?
Wait a minute.
John, I'm going to let you have one warning here. Let's answer each other's questions, give each other some space and time to answer it, or I will drop you. Go ahead.
Okay. Yes.
So how do you know that you are comfortable in the gender that you were assigned at birth? How do you know that?
Because I'm comfortable.
But how do you know that?
Because I'm comfortable. I never once questioned it.
Okay. So here's the next call. Here's the next question for you. Have you ever experienced something that you would consider to be a discomfort of your gender?
Never.
Never? Wow.
Never.
So you've never felt emasculated, you've never felt effeminate, or you've never felt uncomfortable by things people have said about your masculinity. You've never had those experiences.
That is correct.
Then you are the perfect human, and there's nothing more I can say to you, because the exact opposite of those feelings is what a lot of trans people feel.
Okay, but I just want to ask a question. Let's assume that a man just decides, wakes up one morning and says he wants to be a woman. Does that make him a trans person?
That makes somebody has said something. So here's the next thing for you. So you could wake up tomorrow and say that you are a Muslim. Does that therefore make you a Muslim?
Are you equating religion with gender? Is that what you're doing here?
No, I'm giving you the same example as what you've just said. You've just said that being trans is just something that you can just say. Is that what you're saying?
There's a man in Mexico in a court case. Mm-hmm. He said that.
That's very nice for them. That's jolly nice for them.
Congratulations to him. Congratulations. Let's keep it on track.
Congratulations to that person. But I'm going to say this to you. Do you believe I am a fraudster?
I don't know your story, but there are fraudsters out there.
Do you believe I am a fraudster? And do you believe I am presenting fraudulently to you on this show tonight? Yes or no?
I believe that there are fraudsters out there. In fact, I know they are.
No. Final time. Yes or no? Do you believe I'm a fraudster?
I don't know your story.
Well, if you can't answer whether you believe that trans people are fraudsters, then I can't help you. And on that note, I'm going to end the call right there and say, I'm amazed that I managed to get that far with John.
That was incredible. Phoebe, I think the last time I spoke to John, I lasted a minute. So thanks for that. Thank you for your patience.
Oh, yes.
And to bring it up a note, we did actually have a super chat that I'd like to read. We got a super chat not too long ago from James Call. Sent a super chat in for $10. He said, thank you, Phoebe and ex-Christian Aaron, for the show. Thank you, mods, and all the excellent apes in the chat. So that's very nice. Thank you, James. And I'm loving that we're doing super chats now, because it's another opportunity to kind of interact with the audience. It's kind of fun.
We do super stickers too.
Yes, that's true. All right. If you want to get a hold of us here at Truth Wanted, you can email us. You can email truth@atheist-community.org. You can reach out to the ACA at atheist-community.org and see what's been going on our website at atheist-community.org. And those are some of the hardest words I have to say all at the same time. The website has been revamped recently. So if you haven't checked it out lately, definitely everybody who's watching, go check it out online and you can see what is happening here and what's coming up in the near future. There's also a Facebook group. It's run by fans and it's for fans. Go to tiny.cc/FBTWG to interact with the other fans. I was wrong. That's the hardest thing I ever have to say.
tiny.cc/FBTWG.
So a great place. Great place to find other community, or if you just need to rant a little bit after the show, definitely check us out over there too. Phoebe, thank you so much for being my guest tonight.
Oh, it's always wonderful to, you know, have the Commonwealth invasion, you know, occur. You know, some people live in a republic, whereas, you know, we've got a man named Charles, a good old man named Charles running the show around these parts. But there you go. There's not much more you can say about that. We've got that shared bond of, you know, a man sitting in a seat with a nice fancy hat on. But there you go.
That's true. Yeah. Thank you for that. And where can our audience find you to learn more about you?
Well, you can find me floating on other ACA shows. You can find me on, you know, the nonprofits, and hopefully on other ACA shows as well. If you look back into the archive, you can, you know, find me on, you know, the wonders that are secular sexuality. If you want to go and, you know, check out those now archived shows, and if you want to, you know, check out our shop, I think there might still be some secular sexuality merch still floating around, which is very limited. So go there and, you know, fill out your, you know, your cupboards and your wardrobes with, you know, some secular sexuality stuff before it disappears.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you for that. The only part that we can look forward to with the winding down of that program is that we get to have you guys all come on all the other shows. Yeah, we get to share the wealth of everybody. So
it's going to be a new experience for me because you know it's now on an ICS show on a Friday. It's like whoa.
Yeah.
Ooh, hello.
Yeah. We'll definitely have to have you back sometime for sure. Before we head out for the night, I also want to say thank you to our crew, the magic behind the scenes, if you will. Thank you, everybody.
Lovely. Thank you, crew.
Thank you. And thank you for making the show happen and putting up with the little things that we put you through. I am not a very tech savvy person and you have coached me through that many, many times. So thank you so much for that. Thank you to our audience for joining us tonight. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Thank you, Phoebe. And remember, everyone, to always keep wanting the truth. Bye.
Watch The Nonprofits and join the hosts in the live chat Sundays at 3 p.m. Central between The Atheist Experience and Talk Hidden. Visit tiny.cc/ytnp.